Meanwhile...
This is the story of you. Where you came from? How and why you were born? It's the most fascinating, wonderful story in the world. Because it's the story of life.
Mid Valley.
And it has happened to everyone.
Mutations.
You're listening to KLFM.org in beautiful Split, Croatia.
What starts us living? How are we like the animals in the way we begin our lives? How are we different from them? These are questions we all begin to ask as soon as we grow old enough to wonder about ourselves. And I suppose the oldest stories told children are that the stork brings babies. Or that babies are bought at a hospital. Or that they're left in a basket on the doorstep by a good fairy. The truth of the matter is, 9 months before you were born, you were an egg. That's right. You were a tiny, tiny egg, so small that you were almost too little to be seen. You were smaller than the tiniest pinhead. Just as round as the dot a sharp pencil makes on paper. All people, all animals begin their lives as an egg. Whales, fleas, monkeys, elephants, birds, fish, snakes. Every other kind of creature started living as an egg. And so did human beings. We come into the world as babies. But before we're born, each of us grows to be a baby from an egg so small you can scarcely see it on your fingertip. And right now, I want you to look at your fingers for a moment. Turn your hands over so that your palms are up towards you. Now, do you see the little lines on your hand there? And on each fingertip, no other person in the world has those same lines and just that same arrangement. And no other person in the world has exactly the same kind of eyes, nose, feet, or fingers as you have. You are are the only one just like you who was ever born. Or who will ever be born. So the next time you look at yourself in the mirror, think what a rare and marvelous creation you are. And all of you came from a tiny little egg. Even when it was no bigger than a pinhead, it was filled with plans for you to grow up to be a certain kind of a baby. There were built-in orders for the kind of care you had. The color of your eyes, the size of your brain. Whether you'd be a boy or a girl. And all of this growing up would happen just 9 months, and the result would be you, a live human baby. Now, of course, you know that every living thing has babies of the same kind as parents. The mother and father horse only have baby horses. The mother and father rhinoceros only have a baby rhinoceros. And your mother and father, of course, only have baby boys and girls. But in one way, we're all alike. Every baby animal and every human baby starts from a tiny egg. So let's take a look at the egg from which you first began. Because right here is the most mysterious, amazing, and miraculous part of the whole story. And to understand what the egg is made of, you must look at something alive under a microscope. You know what that is. It's a big magnifying glass. And under this, you see that anything alive, whether it's a leaf from a tree or a piece of skin from a person, made up of a great many tiny, small little parts. Now these tiny little parts that your eyes could never see without the help of the magnifying glass are called cells. And these cells are like building blocks. Mother Nature puts enough of these blocks together, she can build trees or flowers or giraffes. You, for instance, are made up entirely of these cells. Not hundreds or thousands or even millions, but billions and billions and billions of cells all stuck together. These cells are each made in different shapes and sizes. What they really are is just a thin covering, inside of which is a tiny drop of wet stuff. Kind of looks like the white of an egg. Right here inside this little cell is the secret of life. Nobody can make it. Nobody knows how nature makes it. We do know something about it that's very important. New life is almost always started by the joining of two of these cells. One from the father, one from the mother. know this is true whether you want to make a baby porcupine or a baby girl. So no matter whether you look at a kangaroo or a whale or a dog or a baby, remember you can be sure of one thing. They all began as a tiny round egg from the mother, which was then joined to an even smaller little dot called a sperm. That comes from the father. Now the sperm is an interesting little creature. It looks a little bit like the tadpoles that swim in ponds. Seems to be all head and tail, an almost round little head or body, and a very long tail, and with the tail, it can wriggle and swim. Now remember, it's so small that once this sperm meets an egg, it can actually swim right inside that little egg. At that moment, some kind of a baby begins to grow. The meeting of the sperm from the father and the egg from the mother is the most important part of the making of a baby. So let's see how nature arranges for it. With the fish, the frogs, then the birds, animals, and finally, human beings like you and me. The mother fish lays thousands and thousands of eggs right in the water. It might be a stream or a lake or pond or the ocean. And then the father fish comes along and pours his tiny little sperm over these eggs from an opening that's right under his body near his tail. Now remember, only the eggs that meet the sperm and join together will grow up to be baby fish. Actually, very few of these eggs ever become baby fish because most of them are lost or eaten by other fish or destroyed in some way or another before they have a chance to grow. All right, what about frogs? That's very interesting. A mother frog lays many, many hundreds of eggs at one time, but before she lays them, the father frog gets on her back, and as the eggs leave the body of the mother, he pours his little sperm over them. Remember, once again, only the eggs that meet and join with the sperm will become frog babies. So you see, with frogs and fishes, sperm from the father enter the eggs from the mother outside the bodies of the mother. That is, in the water, in case of the fish, or on the ground, in case of the frog. But in most other animals and birds and insects, and of course human beings, sperm and the egg is joined together only inside the mother's body. Now let's start with the birds. How are chickens born? Well, some chickens. How do the sperm of the rooster meet the eggs of the hen? Well, sperm comes out of an opening under the father rooster's tail feather. Enter the mother hen's body through an opening under her tail feather. Sperm swims through that opening up inside the hen where the eggs are stored. Remember this, only one sperm can enter one egg. Right away, a hard shell forms over each egg and the hen lays those eggs and sits on them. Hatches out the baby chicks. Now, as you might guess, animals are different than birds. Let's take horses, for example. The father horse places the sperm in the body of the mother horse through a little tube and grows outside the daddy's body just in front of and between his hind legs. Sperm come through this and go into the mother through an opening of her body between her legs. Once inside, of course, the sperm swim up to the place where the egg is. And with many animals, there is usually only one egg ready at a time. And after that sperm is joined with that egg, then the egg will grow and change and develop until it becomes a baby. Whether it's a baby horse or a baby cow or a baby lion depends on whether it's mother or daddy. Are horses, or cows, or lions. Now, of course, the mother horse does not lay her eggs the way a mother hen does. Instead, the baby horse grows inside the mother's body in a little hollow place that the doctor calls a uterus. After a while, the mother gives birth to the baby colt out of the same opening through which the sperm entered. Well now, human babies are made in about the same way. The father places the sperm in the body of the mother in much the same way that animals do. We call this the act of mating. You know it's different from animals in several very important ways. In the first place, the animals usually have different mates every year. There's no family that stays together. And the babies are left by their mothers as soon as they can get their own food and get around. But human mothers and daddies like yours are in love with each other. And they plan to live together always. They want to share their troubles and happiness. Above all, they want to keep their babies with them so they grow up as a family. They're proud of their children because they know that each baby is a part of the father and a part of the mother. So that's why you sometimes hear fathers say, "My son has the same color hair that I do." And mothers say, "Don't you think baby's mouth looks just like mine?" Now remember, the human baby started the same way the animal baby did. Sperm from the father, the egg from the mother had to join in order for life to begin. And they did this inside the body of the mother.
Mid-Valley.
This is the story of you.
Mutations.
It's the most fascinating, wonderful story in the world. But there are several other very important differences between human beings and animals that you should know about. For instance, have you ever wondered why it is that some animals give birth to a large number of babies? And human mothers usually have just one baby, and rarely two or three. For instance, mice and rabbits, cats and dogs have from 6 to 10 babies at the same time. Possums have up to 20 babies. We call these litters. Birds generally lay 3 or 4 eggs at one time, but human babies are usually born just one at a time. And by the way, cows, horses, and elephants, and other large animals also give birth to just one baby at a time. Not all animals take the same time to have their babies, either. The possum takes 11 days from the time the egg is fertilized by the sperm for the baby to be born. A mouse takes 3 weeks. A kitten is born in just 2 months. A monkey takes 5 months. A human baby like you takes 9 months. And an elephant? An elephant takes almost 2 years. So you see, Mother Nature has arranged things differently for each living thing. And this brings us to the most amazing part of this story about how you became alive. You remember that I told you that only girls become mothers? That is because only girls produce the eggs. And a girl begins to produce one egg at a time when she's about 12 or 13 years of age. And this happens once every month until she's almost 50 years old. When one of these eggs meets a sperm from a father, it may start growing into a baby. This happens when the tiny sperm swims into that tiny egg. And the miracle of life begins. All of a sudden, no longer one egg, one sperm. These two things have joined together to become one. We call this the fertilized egg. Now this fertilized egg suddenly begins to grow. First, it divides into two parts. Then each of these two parts divides again. And all the new parts go on dividing and dividing, although they're still attached to each other. This dividing is the way that the egg grows. Also, its shape begins to change. One part begins to become a head. Another part begins to become a stomach. Other parts become heart, lung, legs. And for the first few weeks, this little growing ball of life doesn't really look like anything much at all. Except that at the end of the first month, you're already 10,000 times larger than the first egg was. You have begun to be a living creature. And you need to have food, air, water. How are you going to eat and breathe inside your mother's body? Well, now, here's a very queer thing. Baby, before it is born, does not eat with its mouth. Or breathe with its nose the way we do after we're out of our mother's uterus. The unborn baby gets food and air from its mother's blood. Through a tube that is attached to the inside of the mother and to the navel of the baby. Now every person who's born has a navel. You have one right there in your tummy. It's a little round dimple. I'll bet you call it a belly button. Well, anyway, through the tube from the mother to the baby comes the mother's blood. Which carries a very special kind of food and air to the baby. This is how the baby stays alive and grows inside of its mother. After just 1 month in your mother, you begin to develop tiny little arms and legs and something that looks like a tail. Now, of course, it isn't going to be a tail at all, but the beginning of your spine. After 2 months, you are still smaller than 1 inch. You hardly weigh more than a feather, but you know your face has begun to look like a face? You have a tongue, a mouth, and your arms have grown hands with fingers and thumbs. even your brain is beginning to be formed. And, this is very important, you are definitely a human being. You are not a horse, or a cow, or a bird. You are a human being. And at the end of the third month, you can even kick your legs, curl your toes, and move your thumb. You can open your mouth and swallow. And if someone could look inside your mother and see you, he could tell whether you were going to be a girl or a boy. Nobody can do this, so nobody will know until you are born if you are to be a Jack or a Jill. Well, by the fifth month, you weigh 1 pound. You are a foot long, you have hair on your head and eyebrows, you have eyelashes. By this time, you actually begin to get frisky and start to kick. Now, inside your comfortable little nest there inside your mother, you can squirm around. And your mother, of course, can feel these little movements too. They don't hurt her because you're so little that your kicks are soft, very gentle. And mother loves the feeling of these movements. Because she knows that she has a living child inside her. That is a wonderful, thrilling knowledge. The doctor also knows you're alive because he can hear your tiny heart beating. He puts a listening instrument on the outside of the mother, just over her stomach. And he hears the little ticking of your heart on a watch under a pillow. By the ninth month, your little room is getting very crowded because you're now big and strong. You're about 14 inches long, you weigh 6 or 7 pounds, and you've turned around, head down, waiting to get out of your nest and be born into the world. Then one day, your mother knows by the way she feels that you're ready to be born. The muscles of her body start to tighten up so that the sides of your little room begin to push in and out. Squeezing down harder, harder, until at last you are forced down and out of the mother's body through the very same passage through which the sperm entered 9 months before. Sometimes it takes just an hour or two for you to make this short trip into the outside world. Sometimes it takes a whole day, or even longer. And usually you are born head first stretching your mother just enough so that there's room enough for the rest of your body to follow. And then, almost at once after being born, you give a little cry. That's the way you start to breathe. And if you don't give this cry by yourself, sometimes the doctor gives you a little spank on the bottom, and that makes you cry. From that moment on, you breathe by yourself for the rest of your life. Isn't that a wonderful story? That's the story of how you were born. After you're alive and breathing, the doctor separates that cord that connected you to your mother because you don't need this little lifeline any longer. You no longer need the food and air from your mother's blood. And the only thing that you'll have left to remind you of those months inside your mother that little dimple right there on your tummy.
And that's going to do it for us this week here on the program. Another installment of Mid-Valley Mutations, the story of you. Where you came from, how you came to be, and a whole lot of things involving all that stuff. Hopefully it was educational. Hopefully you enjoyed the journey, as they say. Another live mini mutations creation presentation, call it what you will. I'm just having a good time. That's all. Yeah, things are starting to heat up with Marcus Little. We have one more installment left for those of you who are tuning in with the podcast as they are released. You can go over and catch those Sunday night. 7 p.m. the last installment this Sunday. You really want to check it out if you can. And then we'll hear the final bit here next week, kicking things off with this program. So very much looking forward to that. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. The Marcus Little journey has been very cool, and we've gotten a lot of good reactions to it. I think people are enjoying it, which is good to hear, because I spent a lot of time on it. And you haven't heard the last of Marcus Little. We're going to let the things in the podcast feed kind of sit for a little while, and then you might hear a little bit about how you could own Marcus Little for yourself to listen to at home. So, yes, please watch this space for that information as it comes together. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it, I believe. Yeah, let's see, what else is going on? Well, if you have not been checking out Somewhere in Between, a radio zine program that I do for KMUZ, then I think you might want to direct your little browser, as they say, over to betweenradiozine.com, where you can find all of the back issues of this particular show. And I'm really enjoying doing this. It's kind of more DIY style stories where I actually talk, and there's cool little sound effects mixed in. I have fun doing it, and we try to be a little bit public radio, a little bit punk rock DIY, and a little bit, well, this show. So it's not actually super weird, I'm gonna say that up front, but it is very enjoyable. I do like that. So yeah, tune in to that show. It's got an open submission policy. We'll accept your stories. It's a very cool show. I have a lot of fun doing it, and I hope to see you listening to it. It's that cool. I think that's going to do it for us this week. It's just about the top of the hour, and we want to close things out. So, you guys are wonderful. You guys are beautiful. And without you, there would be no program. Be seeing you. You're listening to KLFM.org in beautiful Split, Croatia.
Mid-Valley.
This is the story of you.
Mutations.
It's the most fascinating, wonderful story in the world. Birds can fly away from their nest within a few weeks after they're born. Most larger animals, like horses or cows, can stand up on the same day in which they are born. And many, many of the animals are as big as their mothers by the time they're 2 years old. Rabbits fully grown in less than a year. A baby mouse is large enough to have its own babies in less than 2 months after it is born. But here again, human beings are different. When a human baby is 2 or 3 years old, it would die if its mother and daddy didn't take care of it all the time. And it'll be many, many years before it's able to leave home and go out in the world, not be lost or hungry. But when we start our lives, remember, we start as animals. We begin growing when the sperm joins the egg inside the mother. It grows in a warm, protected place. If we could see the tiny eggs of human babies and of animals when they first begin, we would actually be unable to tell them apart for the first few weeks. Now, every living person in this world began life in this way. It is a lovely, wonderful story that will be repeated all over again when you grow up. Find the person you love and who will love you and with whom you will have babies.
your own.
Buy wisely. Buy for flavor. Buy Del Monte. Del Monte, the brand you trust for flavor in so many good foods. Time now for Rocky Jordan, brought to you by Del Monte Foods, the brand preferred by more women than any other line of canned fruits and vegetables in the world. Not far from the Mosque Sultan Hassan in Cairo stands the Café Tambourine, run by Rocky Jordan. The Café Tambourine, crowded with forgotten men, alive with the babble of many languages. For this is Cairo, where modern adventure and intrigue unfold against the backdrop of antiquity. Del Monte presents Rocky Jordan and this week's story, The Gum Queen.
I was standing at the door to my office in back of the Tambourine when he came in. Dark skin, a white suit, and black sideburns. Right then, he looked like any other paying customer, only he didn't stop at the bar. He plotted the shortest course through the tables, making every step count. And when he reached me, he stopped, took off his hat, mopped his balding head with a fresh handkerchief, threw me a frozen smile, and held out his hand.
You are Mr. Jordan.
That's right.
My name is Hakkar, Gerard Hakkar.
And what can I do for you, Mr. Hakkar?
I wish to learn if it is possible to rent your cafe for a party.
It's possible, for a price. I'm in the office, Mr. Hakkar.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. Thank you very much.
Yeah, about this party.
Mr. Jordan, a camel caravan arrives tonight from the Anglo-Egyptian Sudan carrying a large cargo of gum arabic.
Is that right?
Do not confuse gum arabic with the kind of gum you chew, Mr. Jordan, which is in reality chicle.
Well, we learn something every day.
You see, gum arabic is employed in pharmacology, textiles, and such. The gum arabic from the Sudan is about the best in the world. Quite valuable.
Well, that's all very interesting. Now, what about renting the tambourine?
Yes, yes, I am coming to that. The men of the caravan have been working in the interior for many months. The journey has been arduous. Sheldon wishes them to have a party with much merriment.
Sheldon? Who's Sheldon?
The owner of the acacia tree plantation in the Sudan. Sheldon is with the caravan, but sent me ahead to make necessary arrangements.
All right, supposing we get to details.
You are willing to take the party, then?
I'm willing to talk about it.
Very well. We will motor into the desert tonight, meet the caravan, and discuss final details with Sheldon.
Oh, hold it, Hakkar. Why out in the desert?
Those are Sheldon's instructions. Everything must be arranged and in readiness when the men finally arrive in Cairo. Well?
I don't see why not. Anything for a change.
Good. At 9 o'clock then, Mr. Jordan. I am certain that you will find the journey most diverting.
I was going to remember those words. Anyhow, at the crack of nine, she rode her car, steered a 1938 rented convertible up to the tambourine door. I piled in and we drove through Cairo and across the Ismail Bridge. On the west side of the Nile, we turned south for a while, then off toward the desert. Oh, I enjoyed every bit of it. With a full moon riding high, the sight of the pyramids was worth seeing again. As we left them behind, her car slowed the car and kept peering off into the desert. Finally, against the glow of the sky, a camel came climbing up over a distant sand dune. Then another and another, till there were 24 of them in a line and coming our way.
That is our caravan, Mr. Jordan. We will wait here.
It's quite a sight, Mr. Hakkar.
Indeed it is. Ships of the desert, Mr. Jordan. Loaded with the product of a year's labor in the Sudan.
You're sure Sheldon's with them?
Observe, riding in the lead there. That is Sheldon. It could be no one else.
We waited there for them to approach out of the deep sands. Sheldon, riding in the lead, especially held my eye. An erect figure and in full command. We sat there a few minutes watching the caravan silently come toward us. And they were in calling distance when all at once it happened. Riding up over the horizon came a pack of horsemen, guns firing and heading directly into the caravan.
Bedouin tribesmen, Mr. Jordan, raiders in the night.
They were pounding in, throwing the drivers to the sand, scattering the camels, and only Sheldon tried to fight back, swinging a whip and pistol, trying to drive off the attack and keep the caravan in line. It was like trying to stop a desert sandstorm.
Come, Jordan, let us go to their aid.
Now, we were out struggling through the sand. By the time we got to the scene, all the camels had been taken and the raiding tribesmen were vanishing into the desert night. All but one who saw us coming and tried to run me down. I just managed to jump out of the way, and as he rode by, I grabbed him by the foot. He piled down into the sand. I pulled him up with his robe tightly taut around his throat. And then, with the shot from Hakkar's gun, he suddenly slumped and pitched face down in the sand. Some of the camel drivers came running up. That's when I met Sheldon. Wearing a man's shirt, pants, boots, and a gun strapped to her side, but all woman.
Is he hurt?
Yes, but he's still breathing.
You didn't have to do that, Hakkar.
Why should I not shoot him? He was a common thief. Why should we not shoot all of them if we could?
Turn him over. We'll see what can be done. Here, help me tear up his rope. We can bind the wounds for now.
Sure. You got the right idea, lady.
Oh, by the way, who are you?
The name's Jordan.
This is Rocky Jordan, Mrs. Sheldon. He is from the Cafe Tambourine to discuss the party.
Help Hakkar, will you, Rocky? Carry this man to the car. Get him into Cairo.
Yes. Mrs. Sheldon, is this necessary? Can we not just leave him?
If we don't get him to a hospital bed soon, he'll die.
And what difference does it make for such as him?
Difference? Dead men don't talk, Hakkar. If this man lives, he can tell us plenty. Who led the Bedouin raid? Where they're taking the gum aerobic? Quickly, Hakkar.
Very well, Mrs. Sheldon. I will take him to the Cairo hospital at once.
And see that he gets there alive.
Sheldon stayed behind to organize the bewildered camel drivers, and I went with Hakkar. We took the wounded raider into Cairo and finally got him into a hospital bed. Sheldon showed up a little later, but the raider was still unable to talk. She told Hakkar to stay at the bedside and call us if anything happened, and she and I sat down together outside. For the first time, she began to look tired.
Sometimes you wonder if it's worth it.
Yeah, pretty rough deal.
Got a cigarette?
Sure. Here you are.
Thanks. We met at a bad time, Jordan. Sorry if I sounded rough.
Didn't strike me that way. Forget it.
I'm not so bad when you get to know me. Just been bossing men around too long.
You were doing all right when I saw you.
Oh? About the party, Rocky.
I suppose you'd like to call it off now, huh? I wouldn't blame you.
No, I promised the men. I don't like to go back on a promise. But you'll have to trust me for a couple of days, though, until I get a loan at the bank.
I don't do business on the cuff, Mrs. Sheldon.
No? Forget it.
I can understand what that raid did to you. Looks like they took almost everything.
Everything I've worked and slaved for the past year, that's all. Anyhow, the plantation's still there.
Does it belong to you?
No, it was my husband's. When a tropical disease got him, I just took over, that's all. And I did all right. Till tonight.
Yeah. About the party, Mrs. Sheldon.
Yes?
Maybe we can work something out.
Told you, there was no money yet.
Well, anyhow, we can talk it over. At lunch tomorrow?
There's a boat tied up at the Nile docks waiting for my cargo. The Minya. You'll find me there.
Well, that made it a date, and I went back to the tambourine. My help had closed up for the night long before I got there, but I had a visitor just the same. Just as I was unlocking the door, he shuffled out of a nearby shadow.
Effendi George.
Who's that?
It is Belak, one of the drivers from the caravan.
What do you want here?
I have much to tell, sir, although my arrival in Cairo finds me woefully short of money.
If that's all you want, beat it.
Wait, please, sir. For money, I would exchange most amazing information.
What makes you think I'll buy?
It concerns the Mrs. Sheldon, and most reasonable, only 10 Egyptian pounds.
Make it 5 and talk fast.
You're listening to KLFM.org in beautiful Split, Croatia.
There is trouble ahead for you, Effendi. You are in great danger.
The information, Belak.
The raider who you dragged from the horse in the desert. He who fell by Hakkar's gun. Very strange, sir.
Come on, get to the point.
The man, he is not a Bedouin at all. Not even a native of the desert.
And who is he?
The man is a Greek named Trakus.
Trakus? How do you know all this?
That is information I do not sell. But I ask you, Jordan Bey, why would Trakus be with the Bedouins?
You're telling it, Belak.
Why would this notorious international thief bother with a mere cargo of gum arabic, sir? Ah, there is something behind this, Effendi. There is more than meets the eye.
All right, so we'll go see Trakus.
No, not I, Jordan Bey. I warn you, keep away from
Belak,
him.
Belak, come back here.
There is trouble, sir. Much trouble.
He kept running, and I didn't try to follow. Belak had told me plenty for his money, enough to send me backtracking to the hospital with a lot of questions. I don't like walking into trouble, and right now is the time to clear it up. When I got to the hospital floor where they'd taken Trakus, neither Sheldon nor Hakkar was there, but plenty of other people were. I shoved my way through the crowd to his room. Then I saw it was too late for any talk. Someone made sure he'd never talk. Trakus was dead, but not from the bullet wound. Something a lot more recent and a lot more sure. A knife with a 6-inch blade.
Del Monte Foods is presenting tonight's adventure with Rocky Jordan. Now here's a little family drama that's worth listening in on. Enter our hero. He's just finished polishing the family car.
There's nothing like polishing the car to give a man a thirst.
Well, you hard-working angel, I've got just the thing you need for a pick-me-up.
Well, keep me not in suspense, my love. My tongue hangeth out.
Hold your horses, dear. I'll just get this pitcher out of the refrigerator. And here you are. Del Monte tomato juice. A nice, cool glass.
Say, that's really refreshing.
Right, for a real refreshment. A pick-me-up when you need it. It's Del Monte tomato juice every time.
Del Monte tomato juice is fresh tasting.
And fresh is really the word. Del Monte tomato juice is made from fresh, vine-ripened tomatoes, the kind with that rich, sunny flavor.
Del Monte tomato juice is natural tasting.
Yes, close quality control by Del Monte assures you of true natural flavor. In tomato juice, just as in all Del Monte tomato products, only the very best tomatoes are used.
Del Monte tomato juice is refreshing.
Refreshing is right. A real pick-me-up when you need it. Real tomato flavor that makes you ask for more.
Fresh tasting, natural tasting, and refreshing.
Fresh tasting, natural tasting, and refreshing. That's what tomato juice should be. And that's what Del Monte tomato juice is. Look for Del Monte tomato juice at your grocer's. Keep a couple of cans handy in the refrigerator at all times. And now we take you back to Cairo and tonight's Rocky Jordan story, The Gum Queen.
All in all, it turned out to be quite a night. The attack by Bedouin tribesmen on an incoming caravan from the Sudan. The wounded Bedouin, who turns out not to be a Bedouin at all, but a Greek named Trakus. Before I can get to him with some questions, somebody else gets there first with a knife. Well, that brought Captain Sam Sabai into the case real quick, and it wasn't long before I was sitting in his office at headquarters. He was taking a big folder out of the files.
Yes, Jordan, it is regrettable that Trakus did not talk before he was killed.
Well, you got something on him, Sam?
A most voluminous dossier. Now we shall see. Yes, indeed. As the driver said, Trakus was a man with an international record.
Like what, Sam?
1945, espionage. 1947, connected with a vast narcotics ring.
Just what do the stand for, Sam?
1948, suspicion of assassination. Well, a very big man in crime, Jordan.
But not anymore.
It's most peculiar.
That somebody would want to kill a guy like that?
Rather, the Trakus should become involved in something so small, such as raiding a caravan.
Well, I don't know. The cargo of gum arabic was worth close to 12,000 pounds.
Hardly worthwhile in view of his previous activities.
So you think it's something bigger? Well, let's have the rest, Sam.
The last we have is when he disappeared into Tanganyika, South Africa, at the beginning of this year. One moment.
You're going to spend the night looking through those files?
We omit no possibility.
And then I take it you won't need me anymore.
Go if you wish. So, Jordan.
Yeah?
About the Mrs. Sheldon, the leader of the caravan, will you be seeing her again?
It's possible. It's on your mind.
I'm merely suggesting, Jordan, that you keep yourself free of murder.
You've got no reason to suspect her.
Not at the moment. But consider, she brings her caravan across the sands almost to the very gates of Cairo before it is conveniently attacked.
That all that's bothering you?
Hardly. But does it not seem strange?
I'll take my chances.
Very well, Jordan. But mark my word, you have not seen the last of the gum arabic.
Sam wasn't telling me what I wanted, so I left him. I was sure he hadn't seen me slip a few pages out of the Trakus dossier while his back was turned and put them in my pocket for future use. Just checking on what the mm-hmms meant. It was too late at night to catch a taxi, so I started to hoof it back to the Tambourine. Only it happened, I caught a ride.
Hello, Jordan. Get in.
Sorry, I'm all dated up.
You are now. This gun says get in.
You can bill me for the ride.
It's on the expense account. You're working for me, Jordan.
Doing what?
Playing messenger boy. You're taking a proposition to the Gum Queen.
Gum Queen?
Sheldon, Jordan, don't play dumb with me.
What do I tell her?
She can have all her gum arabic back.
You got it?
Tell her she's in luck, Jordan. Sheldon gets the whole cargo for half the value.
Why half? You could dump it on the open market and do better.
I'd rather play it safe and take the loss. You get it?
Yeah. Give it to me in round figures.
Half the price, I said. 6,000 pounds.
And I'll remind Sheldon to look you up.
I deal with you alone, Jordan. Have the money on you. I'll be around again.
One more question.
Yeah?
Who killed Trakus?
You're out of bonds, Jordan. Take the deal to Sheldon. And quit!
I wasn't fast enough for him, and his foot slammed me out of the car and onto the sidewalk. The car shot down the dark street and was gone. And I picked myself up, not sure but that Sam was right. There was a lot more behind this than gum arabic. But I was mixed up in it now and had to play along. When I finally got back to the Tambourine, it was almost daylight. I tried for some sleep, but before noon, I was down along the Nile docks to keep my date with Sheldon and her boat. She had traded her rough clothes for something better, and she looked just like I'd hoped she would. We went over to a waterfront cafe. Pretty soon, she got to talking.
You've been real nice to me, Rocky. Real nice.
Yeah, let's just say I'm after business for my cafe.
I know you better than that. You've forgotten all about the party.
Maybe. Any luck with the loan?
I'll get it. Enough to last me through another year.
Does that mean you're going back to the Sudan?
Sure. I've stuck it out there for 5 years. One more year doesn't matter.
It takes nerve.
What else can a woman do but hang on to what she's got left? Can't always be bad breaks.
Mrs. Sheldon, just how bad do you want your gum arabic back?
What kind of question is that, Rocky?
It happens I know how you can get it.
How?
For 6,000 pounds.
Look, Rocky, don't kid me like that. Of course I want it back. Just don't kid me.
Half the value of the merchandise. That's his price.
Whose price?
Some character who picked me up last night.
What's his name? Who is he?
Didn't say.
And how much do you get out of it?
Nothing.
It's a lot more than that to convince me, Jordan. A lot more.
Mrs. Sheldon, I've been looking all over for you.
Oh, Hakkar. Sit down. We've got some talking to do.
The bank wishes to speak with you about the loan.
I'll call them later. Mr. Jordan has some news.
So, Jordan?
Yeah, a guy picked me up last night with a proposition. He'll return the gum arabic for half the value. Most fortunate, if true.
At least I'll get something out of it that way. A whole year's work isn't gone for nothing.
Most interesting that he would go to you, Jordan.
I'm not trying to explain that.
And how do we know we can trust you at all?
You don't. So suppose we forget the whole thing.
Now, do not be hasty, Jordan.
Look, Haka, you're the one that landed me in this mess from the beginning. I didn't ask for it.
Okay, Rocky.
How do I know the whole thing isn't phony? Why should I trust any of you?
Why don't you sit down, Rocky?
Well, all right. Just make up your minds.
We'll go through with it. Only you can't blame me for wanting to know one thing.
Yeah?
If there's nothing in this for you, just why are you doing it?
I don't know. Maybe I can't help liking some people.
Well, I'll push things at the bank and try having the 6,000 pounds for you this afternoon.
One thing, though, Jordan. The police must be informed of this.
You think they'll deliver the stuff with the police around?
The police need not appear until the merchandise is in our hands. Then they can give it safe escort to Mrs. Sheldon's boat.
Okay, it's your money.
And, Jordan, I'll be close around, too. And if it turns out you're working a deal, I'll never forget it.
Right away, we set it up with Sam Sabaya and the Cairo police to move in after the cargo was delivered to me and escort it safely to the boat and out of Egypt. Well, Sheldon's loan went through. She put the 6,000 pounds in my hands. Soon after that, I got a phone call from the guy who had the cargo, and we arranged a rendezvous. That set the stage. And I knew that within the next 2 or 3 hours, somehow I'd have a few answers to the mysterious caravan raid. But I needed some props. So first I stopped off at the 5 and 10, picked up a few things. Then I went alone across the Nile to where the camel trail comes down to the river. At the appointed hour, the camels began to show up one by one. I paid off a share to each driver, who quickly vanished. Finally, all 24 loaded camels were delivered. Then I made my next move, and a short time later, I signaled Sam Sabaya. He moved in quickly with his men.
We will take over now, Jordan.
The caravan's all yours, Sam. My job's done.
Oh, a moment. Were there not 24 camels?
23.
20? Perhaps a mistake in my figures.
We all make mistakes.
Indeed we do. Would you like to clear up one of your mistakes at this time, Jordan?
What do you mean?
After you left my office this morning, 3 pages were missing from the Tracus dossier. Well, Jordan?
You got me, Sam. Here they are.
Thank you. I trust that you found them good reading.
I didn't learn much.
Jordan, I fear there are things that you will never learn. For example, when to leave well enough alone.
A short while later, I was at Sheldon's boat as the caravan slowly pulled onto the docks. Sheldon, Sam, and I watched from the deck as the last of the gum arabic was taken off the camels and loaded into the ship's hold.
Well, there it is, finally.
Yes, Mrs. Sheldon. And rest assured that we will continue in our efforts to find the raiders.
Small chance. But thanks for everything, Captain.
I will leave a detail of men on board for your protection until you clear Alexandria. And the best of luck, Mrs. Sheldon.
Goodbye, Captain.
Coming, Jordan?
Not just yet, Sam. See you in a minute.
As you wish.
Well, Rocky, it looks like I owe you some sort of an apology.
I don't think so.
I'll admit I didn't trust you very much.
Well, nobody expected you to. Anyhow, you're still out 6,000 pounds.
I'm not complaining. Wish you could come along. You'd enjoy the trip.
Yeah, wish I could, too.
A moment there, Jordan.
Oh, you want to see me, Hakkar?
Indeed, I do. There were 24 camel loads to be delivered.
All right, what about it?
Only 23 arrived here.
That's all that showed up.
Then where is the other camel?
How should I know? 23, 24, what's the difference?
The difference, you say? An entire load of gum arabic.
So they held out on you. Go hunt it up if it means so much.
Mr. Jordan, I demand an explanation.
Oh, let it go, Hakkar. We're lucky to get any of it back.
But Jordan paid for all the camel loads, he said. We will not be cheated out of one.
Forget it. We're not going to wait around any longer. Got to get this load to Masai.
Do you mean to say you're going to let him get away
I said forget it. I'm not giving word to shove off before anything more happens. I'll look you up when I get back, Rocky.
Jordan, Jordan, a moment before you go down the gangplank.
What are you so excited about, Haka?
Excited? You're quite mistaken.
I don't think so.
I am certain that you know where the other camel load is, Mr. Jordan.
Yeah? What's there about the load that bothers you so much?
Why, the gum arabic, of course.
You know, I don't think gum arabic interests you at all.
What do you mean?
I think it's something else. These, maybe.
Let me see.
Sure, have a look.
Diamonds.
I don't touch.
Where did you get them, Jordan?
From inside the gum arabic on the 24th camel.
You will give them to me.
Why, Hakkar? Are they yours? Did you hide them there?
Jordan, listen to me.
You masterminded quite a deal, didn't you? The phony Bedouin raid, the deal with me to return the stuff, so you could get a private police escort for your smuggled jewels right out of Egypt.
There is no time to
talk. Even killed your Confederate trucker so he wouldn't start talking. Did Sheldon know about this?
Quickly, before she returns.
Yeah, I knew she didn't.
Jordan, you're a smart man. I'll cut you in. I'll make you a deal.
The other way around, Hakkar. I got the jewels.
All right, anything you say.
First, you fork over Sheldon's 6,000 pounds. And these diamonds go to the police.
I will have them, Jordan!
Hakkar lunged at me, and all at once he was a wild man, fighting and clawing for the bag in my hand. The back of my fist drove him away, but he was in again, pushing me to the rail. The next time I drove him back, his hand went for an inside pocket. That's when I got tired of the game. I moved in ahead with a gun, and his shot went wild. I locked his head in my arm, whirled, tossed him over my shoulder and over the rail. I waited for a splash that didn't come, and then I saw why. When I looked down, it was into the upturned, surprised face of Captain Sam Sabaya. Fez over one eye and what was left of an Egyptian cigarette dangling in his mouth. But lying at his feet where he had hit the dock was the crumbled body of Hakkar.
More from Rocky Jordan in just a moment. After one of the summer's warmer days, Mrs. Thompson decided to have dinner out on the back patio. Let's listen in for a moment.
Hey, honey, this was a swell idea. A warm evening and a cool dinner out here in the patio.
Thank you.
And my favorite cold meats.
Well, help yourself, dear. There's meatloaf and ham and liverwurst.
Well, let me add it. And say, pass the catsup. The kind with that swell flavor I like.
You mean Del Monte catsup. That's my good old standby, darling. I can always count on it for a special flavor treat.
Yes, you can count on Del Monte catsup, Mrs. Thompson, just as you depend on all Del Monte foods for flavor. Say, that Del Monte catsup has a zesty, spiced tomato goodness that just makes those low-cost foods come to life. You can count on the men folks asking for second helpings every time. Yes, Del Monte catsup is spiced tomato flavor at its best. A real pepper-upper with meatloaf, beans, French fries, with any food that calls for catsup. Look for Del Monte catsup at your grocer's. Try it. Then, just like Tommy Thompson, you'll be saying,
pass the catsup. The kind with that swell flavor I like. The Del Monte catsup.
Back now to Rocky Jordan.
The pieces finally fell into place. Trakas and Hakkar had been in the smuggling job together. Their problem was to get the loot off the continent without police interference. So they engineered the phony Bedouin raid. And when the caravan was in their hands, they hid the diamonds inside one of the loads of gum arabic. Then they returned it with the promise of a police escort all the way out of Egypt. That was real clever, and it might have worked. Except that I got onto it when I read the papers from the Trakas dossier, found out what Sam's mm-hmms meant. The Trakas was best known as a jewel smuggler. And the fact that Trakas was last seen in Tanganyika meant just one thing. Diamonds. Well, after Sam had put Hakkar away, he joined me at my tambourine for coffee.
Jordan, I still fail to understand what you see in Mrs. Sheldon.
It's all a matter of taste, Sam. For instance, you make sweet syrup out of your coffee, but not me.
Will you pass me the sugar, please?
Sure. There you are.
Thank you. You realize, Jordan, that I had instructed my men to thoroughly search the gum arabic on Sheldon's boat before it cleared Alexandria.
I didn't know, sir.
As I expected, the diamonds were all found there. They fortunately were not on the 24th camel.
Oh, I took that chance. I knew that holding out one camel would make the real smuggler show his hand. I'm sure glad it was Hakkar instead of Sheldon.
Oh, one more thing, Jordan. About the diamonds.
You mean the ones I had?
Yes. I would like to see them.
Oh, sure. There you are. Look them over.
Diamonds, Jordan? These are nothing but rhinestones. Practically worthless.
That's right. I picked them up at the 5 and 10.
For the finest in tomato flavor, enjoy the whole family of Del Monte tomato products.
Del Monte catsup and chili sauce.
Del Monte tomato sauce and canned tomatoes.
And Del Monte tomato juice.
Remember, buy wisely. Buy for flavor. Buy Del Monte. Del Monte, the brand you trust for flavor in so many good foods. Rocky Jordan, written by Larry Roman and Gomer Kuhl, stars Jack Moyles in the title role with Jay Novello as Sam Sabaya. Original music composed and conducted by Richard Arant. Rocky Jordan is produced and directed by Cliff Howell. Remember, you have a date next week at the Cafe Tambourine, run by Rocky Jordan. Same time, same station. And the story is The Lady from Istanbul. Real roast-in-the-ear flavor, matchless butter tenderness. That's Del Monte corn. One more good food from the brand that always puts flavor first. Packed in two styles, golden cream style and golden whole kernel, Del Monte has that sweet country cream flavor that tastes so good. When you're shopping for corn, look for Del Monte first. Larry Thor speaking. Rocky Jordan is presented over CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Mid-Valley Mutations.